As you're coming in, we're not doing a pop quiz, but we wanted to give you a way to write down notes. But here's the deal. I'm going to be showing a bunch of quotes and that type of thing. At the end, I'm giving you everything that I say. So you'll have my script afterwards. But if I give it to you now, you'll leave and go over to Tim Spivey's class. We don't want you doing that. So anyway, so we'll have these after. So don't let me forget that, okay? But if something hops in your mind, then write it down. But you don't need to. Anything you see up here, you'll get, including all the book references and everything, to give you further study information. So also wanted to let you know, John and I's email is along the top, and then I wrote down my phone number, and if John wants to give out his phone number, call him after 11. Anything after 11, call John. But I'm free. I'm done after this class until I leave on Friday morning. So if there's something where you need someone to talk to, run an idea past, I know each of you come in with different ideas and different reasons perhaps why your church might be stuck. We'd love to sit down and grab coffee with you. I have no responsibilities. Just come grab me. I'd rather spend time with you than going to another class if I can prove beneficial. But John does this for a living. He works for Hope Network. And so he is fantastic at this. But if I can help you, I'd love to make myself available. And certainly a few weeks from now, if you have any questions, you can send us an email as well.
And Brad, just to be clear, I do have a 2:30, so I'm not leaving because I don't like you. I'm leaving because I have responsibilities. So.
That's right. So actually, his next class he's helping should be part two, which is
Bullies on the Playground.
Yeah. Bullies on the Playground, you know, dealing with that one person that sometimes make life difficult. So. All right, well, my name is Brad Cox, and I'm the senior minister at the High Point Church of Christ in McKinney, Texas, which is just north of Dallas. And I'm in my third year with this church, and I'll let John introduce himself and share what he does with Hope Network and kind of what that is. But then I'll tell you why we're together here in this class.
John Mullick and I help Grady King operate Hope Network. It's Lynn Anderson's ministry first, and he handed that off to us about 5 years ago. So we help churches in various conditions of health and not-so-healthy churches as well. We're mentoring ministers along the way, coaching them as well. So if you run across a problem in your world, it's likely that the 500 years of experience that the 18 of us have in ministry, we could probably be helpful. So give us a call, and if you want somebody to walk alongside your minister, we'd be happy to do that. And if you're looking for a minister to replace somebody who's left, then we can also be helpful there. Yep.
If we get everyone just to kind of slide over in your chairs, they're on wheels, just slide over a little bit so we can get some of the people out from the hallway in. So we'll just make room for you, and y'all can kumbaya on the carpet there. I don't know about you, but and I don't know your situation, but here's what I'll tell you. There are different passages and different seasons of your life that help and provide comfort for you. And I have to tell you that Acts chapter 6, where you've got the story of the Grecian and the Hebraic Jews, they're trying to figure out what to do with their widows. That gives me comfort that there are churches that are struggling with growing pains. And I think of Philippians chapter 4, where you've got the Euodia and Syntyche, you know, and they're at each other's throats. And I don't know about you, we don't have any women that don't get along at our church, right? So it's encouraging. And then you read in Revelation chapter 2 and 3 about seven churches. I think six of them are struggling. And so it's encouraging to me that someone else is having trouble and that there are churches that are trying to wrestle with what is our mission? What are we trying to do? The reason that John and I are partnering with this is about 3 years ago, I went to go work with a church in McKinney, Texas that I guess about 10 years ago bought a huge tract of land right out on the freeway, and it is in the third fastest growing county in America, Collin County. It's just growing like crazy up there. And our church had gone through 8.5 years of decline, while Collin County is more than doubling in size. So something is not right, and we had to kind of work on some things. And so John and Hope Network came in and did some pre-work with our shepherds long before I got there. And so he's going to just jump in on different parts and share what he was able to do as an outsider, a third party, coming in to work with a leadership team and then a new senior minister coming in, trying to help a church chart a new trajectory and start a new story. But even if your church isn't struggling, we all realize we've got to step up and we've got to do some things just to keep up with the world around us. And so I love this quote from John Drain. It said, "It must be obvious that the church simply cannot expect to continue to survive for long in the 21st century in its present form. Merely doing more of the same will not be the way the gospel will be communicated effectively to those increasing millions who are searching for something that will make life more tolerable and hold out the prospect of personal fulfillment." Mike Rendell puts it more starkly. "The Christian church is dying in the West. The painful fact is that the cause of great deal of avoidance in the Christian community. To use terminology drawn from pastoral care, the terminally sick patient is somewhere between denial and bargaining." And Donald Ross says that 4,000 churches go out of business every year. So the question for this class is, how do we bring health to our congregations, and how can we do that in a way that makes sense and can bring about healthy change? So how do we create this forward movement? John had an opportunity to spend a day with a guy named Peter Steinke. In his book, Teaching Fish to Walk, he does something that's pretty cool. He draws this different line, and he draws a line between stuck and change, and then detriments and benefits. And what Steinke is talking about is there are adaptive challenges that church leaders and congregations have to go. So it's not just deciding what to do, it's how are we going to go about doing this and managing all the emotions that go along with it. So Steinke makes the case that both change and being stuck are all about process, and they're about external forces. So I want us to concentrate most of all on this upper right quadrant where we're talking about change and the benefits of it. But if we're going to be honest, we also have to look at there are some benefits to doing nothing. There's some benefits to being stuck, and it's less risky. I can't tell you how many shepherds you talk to, and they said, "Let's not do anything drastic, because I don't want it to blow up on my watch." Have you heard that? Yeah? Okay? I just want to hand the baton off. It doesn't have to grow. I just don't want it to die while I'm at the helm, right? It's also familiar. The whole left side of your brain, the way it processes what you know. It processes traditions. It processes warm and fuzzy feelings. And it's the place that you like to go. And then the right brain is your creative part. But that's where you introduce new ideas and new ways of doing things. And that sounds good, but it also is the part of the brain that processes fear and anger and stress and anxiety. So you've got, this just feels good if we stay over here on the left side. Can we just stay where we are instead of bringing in new changes? I had an opportunity to talk with a church that asked if I'd be willing to come and preach for them. And I told them I was happy where I was. This is several years ago. And I said, but I'll pray for it. And so while I was in the midst of 2 weeks of prayer time, they sent a bunch of information about their congregation. And one was a Survey Monkey that the congregation had filled out. And one of the questions was, how satisfied are you with the current direction of the church? And 80% either said dissatisfied or very dissatisfied. So 80% didn't like the course and the direction they were going on. The next question is, how willing are you to make changes to change that direction? 74% said we're not willing to change at all. So we're unhappy, but don't mess with us, right? So that's the state that a lot of churches find themselves in, is, well, we're just going to stay where we are, but we're unhappy. Edwin Freeman says, we will choose chronic bearable pain rather than face the temporary, more intense anguish needed to break free. And so the final benefit that is laid out is, it's just stable. Let's not rock the boat. Let's not do something that's way too extreme. And so what I want to do is adapt from Steinke's chart and say, what are six ways that we can bring about beneficial change in a way that makes sense? And the first one I'm going to get John to address, and that's the commitment level. And really what John was able to do with our leadership team is gauge our commitment level to a process, that if the shepherds and the ministers aren't on board to move forward in any direction, not even talking about what the change is, but if there's not that commitment level in a unified leadership team and a committed team, you really can't launch out and begin a process of looking at what is our new course of direction?
Yeah, so you've got a group of men who are responsible for the church, and they have to go together. That alone is foreign to us in most of our lives. We're usually looking at somebody at the top telling us what we're going to do rather than a group of men trying to figure out how to go together. And so I liken it to boarding a ship. You know, I'm getting on this ship, and we're going to go someplace. And it isn't a cruise ship. It's a ship that's going to be a working ship. And so am I getting on board, and do I know what I'm getting into, and am I willing to suffer the costs of my own discomfort to get where we're going? And a lot of guys will say, well, how would I know that? I don't know where we're going. Yeah. I mean, let's figure out where we're going, and let's count the cost of going there now, before we leave the pier, rather than getting out to sea and figuring out, well, I didn't want to be on this ship anyway. I'm overboard. I'm leaving. So there are processes that you have to go through on the front end to make sure that everybody's going to be in the game with you. Why? Because if somebody leaves the game in the middle, it is exceedingly detrimental to the team. You can understand why. Bob left. Why did Bob leave? What's going on? You've really undermined the opportunity for the church to progress when the leadership team can't even hold together. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you've got to count the cost of what you're going to go through before you go. Don't run quickly into some process of change without counting the cost.
Yeah, in each individual, I like to say you need to be prayed up. You've got to be spiritually filled, because I promise once you start a process with the congregation of changing directions, you will have your spiritual resources drained in a hurry. And so I want everyone on board and ready to go, but spiritually you've got to be at a point where you can give to others. So after everyone's committed, then it's what I call innovation, making a plan for moving forward. So that's the what. And it's near impossible for a church to decide without a clear and compelling mission. So our church ended up going through, our leadership team used a book called God Dreams, and that helped us to kind of explore and look at and really wrestle with what are some stated priorities, what's going to be our mission. Because our church had gone through the process of putting together some flowery statement that never resonated with the church, nor did it get transferred and into the life of the church. So we went through a 6-month process of going through the book God Dreams, came up with where we're going, and then we're saying, okay, every ministry and every budget item has to fit into these two priorities or it's not going to work. And so, well, that's been painful. We are in our 3rd month of working on our budget because we're going through everything to make sure it goes into our mission. So you've got to decide not only what you're going to keep and what you're going to do, but also what's holding you back and removing those inhibitors. And I'll tell you, everything that your church is currently doing, someone is fired up about that thing that you're doing. right?
And so it's a difficult process to determine what are we going to do different. The second thing is you got to determine how. How are we going to do this? And so you got to look at things from a creative way. And as long as we keep asking the same questions and kind of approaching things, well, this worked back in the 80s up in Sherman. Well, this isn't 1980 and it's in Sherman. We've got to figure out what's it going to look like here in 2017 in McKinney, Texas. And so whatever your location is, look at things and ask different questions and approach it. Mary Louise Gifford says, turning a church around, let's see if I can get this quote. Yeah, turning a church around involves a number of years dedicated to dismantling old systems and initiating and implementing newer, more effective systems. So this isn't going to happen overnight. It's a long process, especially the older the congregation. We're celebrating our 100th year at High Point. So basically, we're a rural church that Dallas caught up with and is about to engulf. And so we're still doing things as if we were a 100-member rural church, and that's not who we are right now. And so then you've got to answer the question of why. Change is usually resisted if it's not going back to mission. So everyone's got to be on board with what the mission is, and then you go in and say, we're going to now do these things because we want to accomplish our mission. So Simon Sinek says, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And what you do is simply proves what you believe. So if we come up with, this is our mission, and this is our vision for how we're going to accomplish that mission, then the why is taken care of. That, but you've got to be able to communicate and articulate what that is before people will buy in on that. The next thing you got to work on is what I call influence, and that's getting buy-in. And if I could tell you anything that most people bringing about change do, is they skip this step. And if you skip the step of trying to get buy-in and influence, then faster really becomes slower. And so if you take your time and you talk with the right people and bring about opinion leaders along and gaining this influence, it will help things to go faster. So the challenge that you get into place, when you start challenging a system and saying, we're going to do things different, it brings about tension. It brings about stress. How many of you have experienced that as you tried to do things within? And people don't like that, so they need to be able to trust you. How do they trust you? I spent almost $2,000 on meals last year. It's a lot of breakfasts and it's a lot of lunches. Connecting with people, putting people at ease, and building those relationships. So take the time to listen and dialogue with key ministry leaders. Let me give you an example. When we showed up 3 years ago, we had two kind of manufactured houses that had been dropped behind our congregation. They were leased. And they originally been used for classrooms, but they got so, run down, they started using them for a clothes closet and food pantry. And so we served the poor out of them for over a decade. None of those people ever came to our church. We didn't have a single Bible study in 10 years, but we wanted to keep this thing going, right? Well, the lease came up on these buildings, and it provided us an opportunity. The city of McKinney, when we went to go get them re-permitted, they said, we only said y'all could keep those there for 3 years. We didn't know you still had them 11 years later. So they said, you've got to get them off. So they said, you've got to build a permanent structure. And so our committee was made up of a few leaders and the people that were vested in those ministries. And they were saying, let's figure out how much it's going to cost to build something permanent out there. And so we said, let's let God open our eyes and see what's out there. So we ended up taking them down to see City Square, Larry James Ministry in downtown Dallas. If you want to see how you really reach the poor. And so they saw that there was not only clothes and food, but there was after-school training, there was job training, helping you get a GED, there was temporary housing. It was truly a wholesale place to help the poor in a meaningful way. And our toughest critic on not wanting to do anything different started bawling when she walked on that campus.
She said, this is what we need to be doing, not what we're trying to do on our campus. So it was a breakthrough moment that wouldn't have happened if we had blown through our key opinion leaders that are vested in these ministries. So I encourage you to take that time to invest in them. And then once you've done that, let other leaders come in. When we started making some changes, the first thing we did is we invited every one of our deacons, ministry leaders, and small group leaders that invested in the life of the church, had them come up on a Wednesday night. We fed them. And we said, you're going to hear this in a couple weeks on a Sunday morning, but we want you to hear it first, and then we want you to share your thoughts. Nothing's set in stone yet. This is the direction we're going. And so we got feedback from them, and I got so many compliments that thank you for letting us know. If we are leaders, you're letting us know before the masses hear it. And so taking that time to invest and build that influence. The other thing that will happen from that is on any change, you're looking for the early adapters, which is about 2.5%. And then your innovators is about 2.5%. Early adapters is 13.5%. So you're looking for 16% of your congregation to run with a new idea. And so in our small groups ministry, we have gone from it's just kind of a good old boy where we kind of do a little bit of studying and a lot of eating to we're trying to actually connect with our neighbors and doing some service projects to we're going to do some block parties where we invite neighbors to come be a part of this. So we had 10% of our groups actually do what we had asked them to do. But guess who got to come up on stage and share their stories? It was those early adapters that are buying in. And everyone's like, okay, it's going to be okay. We're actually seeing what's going on.
So after influence comes challenge, making your case to the congregation. So we took some stuff to them. The first step of that is what's called burning the platform. How many of y'all have heard that phrase?
Burning the platforms means you've got to make the case what we're doing is no longer working, it's no longer sustainable, and it's not our path for the future. I heard a speaker talk one time. He said, if you give me an hour to talk about change, he said, I'll spend the first 50 minutes burning the platform. He said, if you don't burn the platform, they're never going to listen to, okay, what's our solution? And so after you spend that time convincing them that you can't keep going business as usual, then the leader has to be able to paint a consistent verbal picture of, okay, what's this going to look like once it's done? I love this quote. Simon Sinek says, leadership requires two things, a vision of the world that does not yet exist and the ability to communicate it. If you can't see it in your mind, and every leader on your team can't see it in their mind, and every leader can't articulate it, and in the same way, it's not going to become organic and make its way out. Because what happens is every shepherd or elder at a congregation, they have sheep or dominoes that line up behind them. And it just takes one guy that they corner in the hallway. Well, I don't know. I didn't really understand it. And if they don't have buy-in, if they're not committed, and they can't paint the same picture, then things begin to come unravel.
So you've got to be able to do that and then challenge the congregation to step up and work towards attaining this future. The next thing is movement, getting off center. And if you remember from our original up in the upper left-hand part of that graph, if you're moving too fast or too slow, too soon, too late, too much or too little, it becomes a detriment. So the change you're trying to bring about. So you've got to have some wisdom there. But you've got to start with a simple win. My first day on the job in McKinney, I listened to the staff talk about how that they kind of felt powerless, that they couldn't do anything, they couldn't spend any money. They had to get approval for everything, and it almost was a crippling effect. And so after I listened to this for a while, we took a tour of the campus, and I'm walking down the hallway, and the first hallway we went to, it's about a 70-foot wall, and there was a Mardell picture that some dear sister put up years ago of Jesus and the apostles. It was about that big on a 70-foot wall. I said, does anyone like this picture of Jesus and the apostles? No? I said, well, let's throw it away. So I took it off, and I put it over in the trash.
And they're like, can you do this? We just did. And they're like, yes. We circled. We have a big square. We came back around to the offices. Someone had taken it out of the trash and put it back on the wall. So I took it and put it back in the trash. And about 30 minutes later, the guy that's over our building, he's a retired guy, comes. He said, did you intend for this to be thrown away? I said, yes. He goes, can I have the frame? I said, knock yourself out, but take it to your car right now. He's like, okay. So he's running out with the picture. Right? Start somewhere. It doesn't have to be huge, but just get some momentum. Okay? Now, a lot of younger ministers in particular like to blow things up by doing something huge. Jim Collins talks about how that you've got to first fire targeted bullets before you send a cannonball. I've heard other people say about throwing a grenade in. So what you're trying to do is figure out one area where you can test and say, let's do a focus group. Let's do one small group, one Bible class that's going to do things a little bit different, and then let's get some feedback before we move on to the entire church doing something. So have something that's kind of targeted that we do that. Okay, so we're creating movement in a way where we're bounding risk and assessing results. The next thing is persistence, which is seeing it through to the end. And this is not easy. Not everyone's going to be on board with the changes that you bring about. Can I get an amen? Okay, so this is where it's tough. You've shared it to the congregation, and now you've got folks that are like, what do we do with this? And so Edward Freeman describes a group of church leaders that once they face the onslaught, it becomes different. And they, over a period of time, they kind of start questioning. That's why John said you've got to start with the commitment level of your shepherds. And what Freeman said is he started looking at this group of shepherds when he was doing a consult. He said they had stopped supplying vision or had burned out fighting the resistance. They have ceased to be the strength within the system. Okay? How many of you have witnessed this at your congregation where guys that were gung-ho, we're going to do it this time. But, man, the brethren have a way of beating us down, don't they? Mm-hmm. And getting us to get that canoe to stop moving. Let's just get some stability. Let's not get crazy here. Let's take a step back. Can we go? You know, it was working. No, it wasn't working. That's why we're moving in this direction. So we've got to have that commitment level to be able to do that. And so we've got to be persistent. And you've got to prepare for what I call obstruction. And there are people, believe it or not, that will do everything they can to stop what you're doing. And sometimes it's people that you've had those breakfasts with, but they still don't agree, and they are going to work against what you're trying to do. And you've got to be patient with that. Resistors, they will identify themselves pretty quick. Can I get an amen? Amen. They will. They'll step up, and you'll know exactly who they are. Sometimes you won't. Sometimes they fly below the radar, and you see things on Facebook. And you're like, oh, okay, thank you for that. So Donald Ross said this. He said, the people in a declining church want to see the church grow. They do. They just don't want anything to change in order for that to take place. And so they're with you that we've got to change. We just don't want to do anything right now or don't like what we put forth. So we've got to be able to do that. And then you have to, as leaders, decide how you're going to address things. We had something that came up on Facebook at our church, and there were 11 people that had either liked or made comments or something. And, you know, one of our shepherds calls and he goes, well, I've got the elder wrap-up today. And let's just say it's going to be one for the ages. I said, hold on. What are you doing? Well, I'm going to. And I said, no. You know, I said, we have 750. They're going to be there on Sunday. And you're addressing 11 people. I said, why don't you pick out your five. I'll get the other six. And we're going to go have lunches and breakfast with them and to find out. And so the most adamant guy, I sat down and had breakfast with him. He's like, well, the elders did the, you know, and talking about this one situation. And so I just asked him, I said, which one's the bad one in the group? And he kind of stood back, and I said, is it Dave? He goes, no, I love Dave. Dave's my favorite Bible class teacher. I read his blog. He's fantastic. Is it Bob? No, Bob helped me with some free legal advice. You know, is it John? No, he and his wife helped my wife in some counseling. I said, well, we got to keep going through the list. Tell me who the bad one is that's doing all this. Well, I guess they're all good guys, but I just don't. I said, could it be that in this one situation, they can't, for the sake of this individual, share exactly what's going on? I said, they're the most godly men this church has put before them, and we've got to follow them. And so we happen to be in a series on 1 Peter, and it gets to the part, and the Holy Spirit is a way of jumping in 1 Peter chapter 5, where it talks about submitting, younger men submitting to your shepherds. And so we just talked about that, but it wasn't something we were going after the congregation. It just happened in the text in the middle of the series. And I was able to brag on our guys and said, we have fantastic leaders. Now it's incumbent upon us, once we've selected them, to follow the leader. And so it was a way to organically make something happen without really going after and making a big to-do. So, but tenacious leaders will not quit. You'll get discouraged, but you'll recover. And I want to share this one last quote. Donald Ross says, you're becoming the destroyer of the mediocre in order to lead the church into something good, maybe even great. John, what would you add to that?
So a couple of things. One, I think there's some great resources in the tree you're going to get when we finish. One book that's not there, I think, that I should have asked Brad to put on there is Kotter, Kotter, Leading Change. He sequences the way changes get done best and in the order that it's 8 steps. It's not fancy. In fact, if you Googled it right now, you pull up all kinds of pictures of these 8 steps. It's a really good sequence, not unlike the sequence he has here, okay? And those early wins he talked about are maybe one of the key ones, because once you step into a change, you need to show folks you mean business and you need to have some early wins so that things go well. What's interesting about what happens at Pepperdine is Brad has 45 minutes to tell you about what he's done, right? This has taken 3 years to get to this point. You're not done.
No.
It's 7 to 10 years to move through a cultural change. If you're stuck, you're stuck because you've been doing the same things, the same ways, and getting the same results, and that's not changing unless something changes, and it will take 7 to 10 years to get there. That's the course you're on. It doesn't change in a year. It doesn't change in 2. It changes in 7 to 10. And you may say, we don't have that long. Okay. So you're going to still need to step through those changes, because people don't snap over on a dime. If they had, you'd have already done it. Right? So it takes time, and it takes persistence. It takes stick-to-itiveness, not stubbornness. Because sometimes you'll find that your worst critics are really helpful to listen to.
Yep.
Don't just stick your head in the sand. I'm going this way, no matter what you do. Listen. Stay open. Okay. But the challenge piece is really important. If you're not reading and aren't aware of Edwin Friedman's work, A Failure of Nerve, you should become familiar with it. And if you're not familiar with Peter Steinke's work, Teaching Fish to Walk, you should become familiar with those two writers. They are outstanding help to church leadership, because church leadership is not in the head. Church leadership is in the emotions and working through the emotional processes that you yourself go through. Because how many of you love to be hated by your church? Right? You just love that. That's why you make these moves, so that people will hate you. Of course not. You make moves because you know it's the right thing. But you want to be liked. You want to be a good leader. And so because we don't want to get our ears chewed off, we back up from the things we know we need to do. Good leadership says we understand where we're headed, we know what we're about, and we're going there, and we want you with us. This is Jesus, right? Get behind me, Satan, he said to Peter when he said, look, you're talking about stuff we don't want to hear about. You've got to stay the course. And ladies,
You are so important. Mm-hmm. You are so important to the well-being of the church. Yep. Not by blindly supporting your man, but by being alongside him and helping coach him, and the pillow talk matters. All of that matters. You matter as much to the church as he does, because you're in this together. So I'm happy to see the female faces in the room. You matter.
Yeah, we had Reggie McNeil came in to speak and do something. While he was there, he met with our leadership team, and we just asked him, you know, go for the entire weekend, tell us what you see and everything. And he kind of have a jarring thing. He talked with our shepherds, and he said, you guys are celebrating your 100th anniversary this year. We had some banners up and everything. He said, you won't make it to 150 unless you start changing course now. And he said, the thing that causes leaders to be anxious and back up from change is when their nickels and noses start declining. He said, you have to be willing to go through the dip before you can start going up, to go from a good church to a great church. So just the whole anxiousness within your leadership and within the church is huge. The other thing, I'm glad you mentioned the females, because my wife has been very beneficial over these past 3 years. And she's like, we got an invitation to go do dominoes. I know you don't want to go tonight. We need to go with that group and play dominoes with that group, because they need to see you as a human and spend time with them. If you're a minister, don't forget your pastoral duties. This takes up a lot of time, meeting with folks and everything else. That doesn't mean you can shirk your hospital visits and everything else. A lot of it is learning to be a credible carrier of the message. So we've got about 10, 15 minutes. I would love to answer questions that you guys have about something we've shared, or a specific thing, especially with John here before he has to leave. If you have a question, something that you want us to address, we'd love to talk. Yeah.
So you're talking about 7 to 10 years for cultural change, and you're wanting to bring the leadership on board, and you've got certain members of the leadership that have already kind of made it clear that they're short term, mm-hmm. that they're in transition, that they're going to be moving away. Sort of, how do you deal with kind of creating the buy-in for that long of a period of time, knowing that you've also got some important leaders in your congregation who probably will not be there to see it through?
That's a fair point. I'll genericize that a little bit and say what we're learning at Hope Network is long-term leadership is quite beneficial. And an eldership that churns every 2 years, you're doing new folks, you're moving folks out, you're moving folks in, is not helpful. We would recommend at least a 4-year term for those gentlemen in their role. And not churn it all the time, because every time you take somebody, put somebody in or take somebody out, the group changes, the trust level drops just a little bit because they're new guys that they're not sure of, and so longevity in that role makes sense. The reason that a lot of churches churn is because they don't trust those guys to keep their to not become the dominant member of the team, and so they roll them out and roll them back in and do all that kind of finagling. If you can't have the conversation with a guy that's misbehaving in the room, you shouldn't have gotten into the room. And if you can't have that conversation, you may not need to be in the room. You've got to self-police inside the elder room. And if you want to hear more about that, come to us at 2:30, because we're going to talk about the bully on the playground. But that doesn't have to be that way. Longevity in the role is going to help you do the long-term work. And that goes for ministers, too. If a minister rolls out every 3 years, which is typical, right? Did you know that? The life of a minister in a church is 3 years. You can't get there because that guy's rolling out, or you're rolling him out. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's why longevity in ministry matters. That's why this man has probably signed up for long term, right? I'm going to stay here. I'm not going to go to the next people that try to pull me away. I'm going to stick around. So, yeah, if a guy's going to only be in for 2 years, but he leaves because it's time to roll, and everybody knows that, that's different than if he just leaves because it got hot in the kitchen. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yes.
So does Hope Network come and do assessments for congregations where we want to have an elder minister retreat, and we're looking for somebody who can facilitate that for us? Is that the kind of thing that you guys do?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, and John came in and spent a lot of time with our shepherds on the front end before I got there. And then we've had some refresher meetings,
yes,
which have been very helpful to say, remember what we committed to? Remember some of our ground rules? Remember what we signed up for? So,
yeah, the model.
Can John write his number on the board?
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. The model for help in the past has been a retreat. You get somebody to come in and help you with the retreat, and that's supposed to make it all better. Okay, our model for help is different than that. It's with a group for a time, and then checkups every so often. That's what we would prefer to do because we think that works better.
But in terms of the initial contact, how do you do the initial assessment?
It depends
is that
on
not in a retreat setting.
Yeah, it depends on what's going on with the church. We'll take it, we customize it to whatever you need. But you know, we could start with a retreat. That would be fine. But it takes a bit more because the dynamics in the church are huge. I mean, there's a lot of things to untangle and understand.
So. And a lot of times on just a retreat weekend, people can be on their best behavior. But if
all right, good.
Okay, yeah.
Well, John actually came to one of the churches we were in and did a retreat. I'll speak to the benefit of long term. When I was in Longview,
yep.
And he opened up this huge can of worms, and the weekend was over. And then there was no follow through. The elders didn't desire that continue because all they saw was he just created all these problems. And what he really did was just allowed them to speak their own issues. And so long term communication would have been much better for that church, but all they desired was the short term.
Yeah, and to be fair, the can of worms is already on the table.
Absolutely.
You know, I didn't create the can of worms.
No.
Sure. We're going to go here, and then here. Go ahead.
Connor talks about those small wins. What do you think are some small wins that churches need to celebrate to help get the bigger stuff?
Okay. I'll just tell you, at our place, you need to think of them in two different ways. Everything outside of the worship center and then inside the worship center is a completely different thing. So we were able to, do some different changes on our campus. We were able to go from 13 small groups to 40 small groups. Because the 13 groups we had, 10 of them have been together for a decade. So they were closed systems. So our new people were coming in. They couldn't get involved in life of the church. So we had to have some open systems. We also required each of our ministry leaders to bring in an apprentice. Because we had these closed systems, fiefdoms, where folks had been parked in different ministries and had controlled those ministries for decades. And so we required new folks and new blood to come in and train some new people in case you weren't going to be with us. So all those things we did in the first 2 years, this year has been our most difficult because we've made minor adjustments within the worship center. So I would say outside of what happens within worship, it's a lot easier to have wins to get started. Yes.
If you could take a time machine back to year one of this process for you at High Point, what's something that you would tell yourself to do differently, looking back on?
That's a good question.
Everything.
No, I haven't. I think that I would try to do some of the bringing in. I spent a lot of time with our shepherds in year one, and then after that went into the next layer down of some of our ministry leads. I think I would have started earlier with some of the guys that were king of their castle and start building those relationships before we had to start making some changes in those. So it is all about relationships if you want to bring about change in the congregation. Yes, you have a question?
Speaking to this gentleman back here, I cannot toot John's horn loud enough. My husband's in here too, and we've recently gone through the women's issue and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And after the 20% move,
right,
he's come back to help the beat up leadership.
Yep.
And you continually need stuff like that to live up to your commitment and see it through.
Yep. Okay. Yes, over here.
So one of the things Friedman says is, anxious aside the anxious community, which I think many of our churches are right now, being the non-anxious leader. Then he throws the caveat in there. Should such a non-anxious leader rise, the anxious society will do everything they can to sabotage.
Yep.
How do you avoid that sabotage?
Okay, you don't. The only way you know a good change is complete is when the sabotage happens. Until the sabotage happens, the change is not complete. It's the way we're built. And the sabotage will come from the person that you love the most and think the most of often in that system. So be ready. Those are the keys to the kingdom. You don't go try to make the sabotage happen. You let it happen. That would be silly to make the sabotage happen, to goad somebody into sabotaging you, right? That makes no sense. But it's going to happen. And when it happens, you can smile. Because now you're moving on to the next step.
And if you're prepared for that, then you can react in a non-anxious way when you want to go after that person. But if you know on the front end it's going to happen, then it allows you to do that in a way. Because what you're trying to do is avoid losing your credibility in how you're interacting with difficult people. Yes?
Great question, Rex.
Forgetting your pastoral capacity.
Yes.
How do you become an effective leader of change, which is a task in and of its own?
Right.
Continue your pastoral work. How do you prevent from burnout? And as part of leading change, trying to create a culture of change where the pastoral work doesn't fall on the pastor figure.
Yeah, I would tell you that I have a really good group of shepherds that on a handful of particularly difficult things that need to be addressed, they provide me some protection because they don't want people to stop listening to me in the pulpit or don't get excited when I go to see them in the hospital. So they want to protect those pastoral connections. And so they've been very good to, on certain things, step in and say, you don't need to be the one going to visit this person. Let us handle this. I have history with this family. They've been difficult in the past. It's nothing to let us go down this road with them again. Great question.
Yeah, I'd say one more thing to that. And Friedman would say this. You are leading when you do these three things. Remain calm, stay connected, and take a position. If you continually do that along the way, you are, by definition, leading. And the toughest, well, they're all tough to do, right? In an anxious system, if you can remain calm, we all know this. The people we admire are the ones that can stay calm in a storm. You stay connected. You go and shake the hand of the person that you feel is your enemy almost, right? You don't smother them. You don't hover around them, but you stay connected to them. You go have coffee with them. You invite them. If they say no, you invite later. And then you take a position. I believe this is what we need to do. I believe in what we're doing. I think, I feel, I know. That's not a bad thing to say. Our former president got in trouble for using I a lot. Okay, fine. But I is a good word when you're taking a position. We is okay, too, if you're talking about the leadership, but I is better. It's definitive. It's this is where I stand. Then other people can move around. If I don't know where you're standing, I don't know where you are, you're fuzzy, and you're not nearly as attractive as if I know where you stand, even if you stand counter to what I believe. I'd rather know where you stand than try to figure out and see if you're hiding something behind your back or not.
All right. I'm going to pray over you guys, and then I'm going to... John, why don't you take this over?
Sure.
And
sure.
If you mind passing those out on the way out.
These
are just the completed notes for you and book references and that type of thing. So we'll give them to you on the way out.
I'm going to do that. I also want... If you're a minister... And you really want to know how to do this, and a guy that's doing it well is standing before you right here. He is a fine, fine minister, connected to his church, doing this work very, very well. And so, asking questions.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let me pray over you. Father, thank you for this time. We thank you for these people, and we thank you for their desire not only to grow in you, but to grow healthy churches. Lord, we desperately want the kingdom of God to expand. We want there to be healthy outposts for kingdom work to be done. We want every generation to be represented, and we want Jesus to be told. Lord, I pray for courage. I pray for wisdom. I pray for discernment. And just pray a blessing of strength over each of these people as they go back into their individual situations. And just pray that they feel your presence as you encourage them to be about this work. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.